What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the TWC Stay Hated Podcast. On this episode, I got a chance to chat with Mike D. He is the founder of the Heavy Breathing Project as well as MDSM. Before I get into the details of the episode, just want to remind you guys, Patreon page is up and running. Great way to support the show. All sorts of extra content on there. If you don't want to do that, if you could like, share, rate, subscribe, tell your friends, that's very helpful as well. And if you just want to listen, that's cool too. I appreciate you guys. As far as this episode is concerned, Mike is a really cool dude. He has been through it. He has passed with addiction, and he has turned his whole fucking life around and is doing really awesome things inside of powerlifting and outside of powerlifting. And kind of linking those two things together, he is a very raw, uncut, real sort of individual, which I really respect. And I don't want to give anything else away about this episode. So that's all I got for an intro. This is episode 143 of the TWC Stay Hated Podcast. Enjoy it. What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the TWC Stay Hated Podcast. On this episode, I am joined by Mike D of MDSM and the Heavy Breathing Foundation. I've been following Mike on the internet for a little while here. We have some mutual friends. We have a somewhat similar background with kind of how we got into lifting weights. And I see him doing a lot of cool stuff. He's been a supporter of Trigger Warning for some time now. So I kind of reached out and wanted to get him on the show, give him a platform to tell his story and get into the different things that he's doing with powerlifting and stuff outside of powerlifting to help individuals. So stoked to have him on the show. Mike, how you doing today, buddy?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm well, but man, you know, it's kind of bench day, so I'm eating a bunch of food and get ready to take something heavy a little bit later. So I've kind of been following you from the outskirts here. You know, I don't know a whole lot about you. I kind of know your general vibe, but I don't know you personally. And I honestly, like, because of what I do for work, like, I try to not be on the internet as much as possible outside of what I have to, you know what I mean, to run the business. So I've kind of backed off on like creeping on people and finding the nitty gritty about what they're about. But I see what you're doing and it seems really fucking cool, man. It seems like you're more about like life as a whole instead of just being a lifter. It seems like you're trying to kind of reach outside of just the like standard, you know, I went through this stuff and I found powerlifting and powerlifting saved my life. And that's all that matters now. It seems like you're kind of going past that. So, that's something that really interests me. Right. Let's kind of just give people a brief background on yourself. How old are you now? And how long have you been lifting weights?
I'm 36 years old and honestly, I've been lifting my entire life, but I've only been dialed in for the last 7 or 8 years or so. As in like dialed in as in like in this sport pursuing strength. Right.
Sure. I've always Did you play sports and shit?
Nope. Hated it. No, okay. I wrestled and I stopped. I was decent, but I stopped wrestling because they kept breaking my nose. So, and like, I broke my nose over a dozen times. I had facial surgery, I had reconstructed and got smashed up a year later in the pit. And I was like, whatever. But I mean, like that's not here or there. Like that's why my nose makes a U-turn. But I wrestled, but believe it or not, I was in marching band for like 3 fucking years because I didn't want to do PE. And then the day after I graduated, they called me and said, oh, you have to go back and do freshman PE as an 18-year-old boy, 18-year-old man, I should say. And like, whatever. It's like, I was always into lifting. I was always into like heavy music and stuff like that. And just like, I always took out my anger in the gym and stuff like that. So grew up, you know, during the 80s, during the golden era of like WWE, WWF back then, Ultimate Warrior, you know, you got Hulk Hogan. And then my hero was Terminator, like, with Arnold Schwarzenegger from Terminator 2, Judgment Day. And then Bill Kazmaier was always shown on ESPN for the strongman stuff. And all I wanted to do is pick up shit, you know? I was always like a chubby little kid and they made fun of me. But one thing was always true is you couldn't take away so much strength. Like you can either pick it up or you can't. You know what I mean? So
yeah, it's very like the rules are very black and white when it comes to that shit. It's like you're either – that's kind of something that drew me to powerlifting too is that it's like – or lifting in general. It's like you know, it's cliche, but it's like 500 pounds is always going to be 500 pounds. Right, it's right. Like, that's the truth. Like,
right.
It doesn't give a fuck about your feelings. It doesn't give a fuck about what else you have going on. Like, the weight is the weight. And yeah. I like that. Having like that constant is something that's really helped me. So, I just know briefly your story. You know, I know that you, are in recovery. I know you've had problems with substance in the past. Mm-hmm. And you've pulled yourself together. I have a similar story myself. September, I'll be, I always have to double check. I believe it's 12 years, off of opiates. And that was my shit. Yeah. And so I'd like to hear a little bit about yours, whatever you feel like sharing, man, like, you know, how ugly it may have gotten, you know, details, whatever you feel comfortable with sharing. I know people like hearing this, and I think it's important because something like your response to me, right? You're like, congrats, sick, like all that. Like, I kind of judge people on what they act like when I tell them that I'm in recovery.
Right.
Because you know what I'm saying? You know, you tell someone and they don't know and they look at you kind of sideways. It's like, oh, well, I guess you're fucking perfect then. Right. You know what I mean? Like,
jokes like, oh, my prison name's this. And they make it, and it's like, well, my prison name is Mike.
Well, it's just like fun. It's funny because people will like toss judgment. You can tell. And then other people who have had struggles or people who might be a little empathetic, like hear you and they're like, oh, congratulations, man. That's incredible. That's awesome that you know, figured your life out or whatever. So, so what's your story, man? Like, let's hear it. Like, what have you gone through to get to where you are now?
Well, first of all, I'll have 8 years in September.
Awesome. September. Congratulations.
Thank you. On September 10th. And, my drug of choice was opiates as well, but I didn't discriminate at all. But my drug, I was by the end of it, I was definitely burnt out, but like my drug use started when I was like 14. And long story short, I wasn't like very social as a kid. I went through like a lot of trauma when I was younger. I had a really bad, like child. I was abused a lot, just whatever situation I was in. I had a really bad babysitter. And,
sure.
It just kind of led me down a bad path where I started doing, like when I got in trouble, people started liking me and that's kind of helped me go down that path. And it's like, okay, cool, whatever. But anyway, by the time I was in my 20s, I did heroin for like 7 years straight with crystal meth. And I was, you know, I smoked crack, all kinds of shit. But the ugliest part of my addiction was it made me lose like my family in a way where like my dad was dying. I wasn't even present for it. Stuff like that. I don't know. It's like my addiction's all over the place, man. I mean, just shoot me a couple questions, I guess, but it's kind of hard to, not that it's hard to talk about. It's just, there's so much to it, you know?
Yeah. There's lots of layers. So I guess like, so you started using when you were younger and then, you know, was it one of those situations where, I guess ask this, like, have you gone through, how did you clean up? Like, did you go through a program? I know people have different ways of doing it. I don't think there's any right or wrong way. Right. Like, how did you address that? And I guess what was a turning point for you?
Right. So basically I've been in and out of recovery programs since I was 14. Like the first time I went to AA, I was 14. And then the first time I was locked up, I was like, went to juvie or something. I was 15. But, I've been arrested more times than I can count. I've missed every holiday you can miss. I've missed birthdays for my family members. I missed birthdays for myself. And then, really what the turning point was, I got locked up my third DUI. I had three DUIs. It was funny. I don't think drinking was the problem. It's just, I got a third DUI. Like, you know what I mean? Didn't discriminate. If I couldn't get dope, I'd get something. Right.
Yep.
Third DUI. It sounds like a cool story. It's really not, but I crashed my car into a cop's house and,
oh, fuck.
Yeah, but like, it's like, I wasn't intentionally trying to crash a car into a cop's house. I was just having to be a cop's house. Right.
Yeah.
And I was on formal probation at the time for heroin sales. And so they threw a, I was supposed to, you know, I was like, oh, okay, I could bail out. But they're like, no, because I'm on formal probation, you violated. So now you don't get to see a judge within 48 to 72 hours. You get to see a judge within 14 business days. And then when I got booked, they booked me on the DUI, but then they dropped it and booked me on the violation. Then all of a sudden became this whole shit show where like I was going back and forth in the court for like 6 months on the bus straight. And then when I was trying to get the case to run concurrently, waiting for them to actually drop the DUI or bring the DUI up, you know? And then they just said, fuck it, la, la, la. Like, I'll just take my time. I was looking to do like a year for the violation. And the judge was like, do you have anything to say? And I was like, yeah, man, like, unfortunately, this DUI is a part of my story now. Like, told him, like, I plan to be better after this. You know, I told him I was doing good. I just had a rough night. And, you know, unfortunately, my dad's home. He's dying, like, right now. I really need to go be with him. But I'm going to do my time here, and I'm going to get out. I'm going to be good. And for whatever reason, the dude let me out. He dropped it. He let me out right then and there. And he said, very soon.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And he said, very soon in this courtroom again, you're going to do a mandatory 5 for whatever. Because I had so much stuff. I have my record isn't violent, but my record is incredibly, like, party fueled. There's just, like, sales charge after sales charge, DUI after DUI. There's, like, all kinds of just – I was very – stupid. That's all I can say. I did a lot of dumb stuff. Anyway, sure. I went home and they put me on house arrest. And I was on house arrest, put me on house arrest for 6 months. And during that 6 months, I just watched my dad. It was the last 6 months of his life, right? And I just watched him try his hardest to be his best for me and show me he was still strong. And I had about 4 months. And I was sitting there when he was dying. And my dad asked me to stop being a follower, to start being the leader he knew I could be. And that's when I started doing it. And that's when I turned my life around, tearing up a little bit. But like at that time, the girl I was with at the time was pregnant. I was plugged into a wall and my dad was dying on a bed and I had nothing to offer the world.
Sure.
Like, everything that I put into getting sacks of dope, when I was strung out, I had no money, but I could make money pop up. I could go on these missions and make it happen. I was like, if I can do all this dirt, I can do all this positive shit too. Because I have this friend, his name's David Cook. He's my longest friend I ever had. And he has like ADD and he has the same kind of mentality that I would say me and you do, but he put it in a positive direction. He looked at me and said, what you have is a superpower. People look at us and think that we're shitty and that we're stuck on something, but we're just all in or all out. So just, if you're going to be about it, be about it then. So I dropped everything that I was doing that was negative behavior. And I just said, I'm just do the hard way, because the hard way is the right way. And what I mean by that is like not having to do like crime and stuff like that to make some money, or have to like do scandalous shit or be deceptive to family and friends to look okay. You know what I mean? So I just had to do it the hard way. And for the last, and that's my birth of my son is like my pillar, my mark. When my son was born, I just didn't stop. I knocked on every door, asked for jobs, was given job offers, would walk in. They're like, you know what, dude, we can't hire you. I know you told us about your record, but they won't let you in. They rescind the offer. You know what I mean? And I just,
sure.
And I was like, fuck, well, I just didn't bow down. I just kept going. I was going to school. And then this guy, I was training. I started lifting weights because I had nothing else to really look forward to besides, of course, like, you know, my kid and stuff. But I needed something to look forward to every day, so I would look forward to the gym. And I was like, okay, because I spent so many years tearing myself down, it was time to build myself up. And like we said, the barbell is always honest, right? Mm-hmm. And I started training with offered me, because he had a gym or whatever. He's like, hey, man, like, you're pretty good. Like, why don't you get a cert and you can work here? And basically, he took me in. He taught me the ins and outs on how to be a decent like one-on-one trainer. And this ain't about powerlifting. This is just general fitness. You know what I mean? So the guy offered me for the trade. I saw it as like being able to learn a craft. And I just dove into it. Like, I would be in the gym for 8 hours a day. And I would just study my books. I would geek out on YouTube videos, listen to podcasts. I hardly even listen to podcasts anymore, because honestly, conversations about strength are boring to me now. Because that's all I talk about. You know what I mean? It gets to a point where it's like, yeah, man. What else do you want to tell me about a simple hinge? Like, I know how to deadlift. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. There's all these cues out there. And it's just like, I don't need to talk about it anymore outside of like the people I deal with, you know?
So, sure.
Go ahead.
I think it's really sick. Like, you know, that mentality that like I have it's a superpower thing. And I've definitely experienced that. You know what I mean? Like, where it's like, if I can make this, it's like, man, like when I was in the, you know, the depths of my addiction, like I had a job that I was at every day or whatever. Like I was able to balance those things. And then it's like, when you step away from it, it's exactly what you said. Like, if I can make this work doing like all this sketchy shit,
right?
Like, if I apply that to something else, I'm going to be successful. And I talked to my wife about it. We just had to put down our dog. It was brutal. And for me, that was a real like wake up call, because it was like the first time in my life that I couldn't outwork something. Like no matter how much work I put into it, like, she's not coming back. It's final. Right, she's right. gone. And that was really, that was a moment for me, but you can see the positive aspect of it where it's like you said, it's like bang on every door, fucking apply to every job, talk to everybody, read every book, do all this stuff. It's like,
yeah.
eventually something's going to give and you're going to get it. It's like,
right.
I kind of lived the same way where it was like, I had my knuckles tattooed and my hand tattooed before I had a full sleeve because right. I didn't want to work in a fucking bank. Like I did all that shit. Like I was like, fuck this. I'm not doing this. And like you said, it's like, if you can kind of outwork your situation, and that's something that it's weird that like drug addicts and, you know, people with substance problems, like have that skill. It's just like, not directed at the right shit.
Exactly.
It's like, it's
like, I feel like we're, and the truth is, we're lazy. You know what I mean? Yeah. We want to do everything the easy way, but then when it comes to doing the hard way, it's like, fuck, that takes work and effort, though. Like, it's so much easier. But yeah, I can do it, but I really don't want to. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I used to have to do like group classes and shit, and like, I didn't want to wake up at 4:30 in the morning, but I had to get paid, so I did. You know what I mean? But it's like now I wake up every day at 6:30, but I, because not necessarily I want to, it's like I miss opportunities if I don't. I truly believe that there's opportunity and potential in every fucking situation of every second of every day. Every person you talk to, that's networking. You know what I mean? Everywhere I go, it's like there's so much out there. It's like all you got to do is open your mouth and ask. And the whole thing is like I was so stubborn for all those years. All I had to do is ask for help. People go like, oh, how'd you make this nonprofit? It's so fucking hard. I'm like, I just asked, dude. I just turned in some paperwork and my homies filled it out for me. And I made a board of directors out of my friends and I have a nonprofit. It wasn't that hard. Like, you know what I mean? I just had a dope-ass mission and it's like, everything's clear. It's like, it's clear vision. That's it. You know? And it's like the same thing with MDSM. It's like, how'd you do that? It's like, well, sorry, are you still there?
Yeah.
It's like, how'd you do that? It's like, well, I only have one total, right? I've done a lot of bench only because I've been injured a lot. I have one total that's from my first full power meet from over 7 years ago, and it's only 1,200 something pounds raw, right? And I'm going to get back on the platform finally in this November. But I kept putting myself – I kept training to get back to that full power, right? And I've torn my biceps twice now trying to do that. I don't have one on my left arm. I don't have one on my right arm, but I still deadlift. But when I tore my last bicep – when I had my last tear and I got back up, I was like, cool, man, all this effort, it's like the drugs, all the effort I'm going to put into getting on the platform, I just put into my businesses and my ideas and see where it goes from here. Cause I'm going to be sidelined for a while. And when that happened, like 2 years ago, just like the year after COVID happened or whatever, just everything started blowing up. It's like, just where you apply your energy. It's like, that's why I try to tell my athletes and friends. It's like, you put all this emphasis. It's like, oh, I got to get my bench up today. It's like, cool. What about your school? What about your job? Like, what are you doing there? Put that energy in there too. Because at the end of the day, you're paying me to help you learn how to lift and coach you through a program, but no one's paying you to pick up that bar. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. There's something to that. Like, there's very few people that are fucking making money lifting weights, right? So it's like you have to make sure your other boxes are checked. And I kind of go back and forth on this, if I'm being honest, because I think being all into lifting the weights, like when you can, when the opportunity arises and you're in a point of your life where you can do that, I think it's fucking sick.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You know what I mean? Like I moved to Columbus with $600 in my pocket to train at Westside. Like I had nothing, but I literally said to people like, I'm 30, I'm single, and I've got no kids. This is the only time I'll be able to be this irresponsible.
Yeah, totally.
Fuck it. Yeah. Like, fuck it, I'm going in. But I think that's really cool. It's like your shit kind of goes outside of just the lifting weights. And so let me ask you this, because it's something that I kind of struggle with where I'm like, obviously I want to be a positive influence to the sport and hopefully that positivity goes outside of just powerlifting. And I feel like you do the same thing with a level of realness and sort of like rawness to it. Do you find that, like, because obviously, you know, with your background and your past traumas and all this stuff, like there's a certain amount of negativity that comes along with that. Like I find myself like, with my positivity, it's kind of like if you put it out there constantly, like it keeps you in check. Because if you went on a tirade on the internet about how everything sucks and everything is shitty and the world sucks, all this stuff, like people, like people would be like, what the fuck, man? Like, you're supposed to be the positive guy. Right. Do you find that like putting it out there kind of keeps you in check as well? If you're having a tough day, you don't really have the option to be poopy pants about something because people are looking towards you.
No. So I feel like I used to be like that guy. I bitched about everything. I bitched about people lifting shitty. I bitched about people talking about other lifters trying to reinvent the wheel with like weird cues or new methods that don't even make sense to me. Right. And I realized I was being a bitch, you know? And what it is like, people who bitch without offering a solution are bitches, you know? And so yeah. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to just start putting stuff out there that I think's good. You know what I mean? I don't need to necessarily put out the same kind of content. Like, there's so many videos on how to like bench or how to, you know, pack your scap and stuff like that. I'm just going to put out what I want to put out. And a lot of it kind of had to deal with like the mental thing of it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, mm-hmm. barbell knows confidence. You don't even waste your time coming into the gym if you don't think you're going to get the weight, stuff like that. My coach is Josh Bryant. And I actually found his, when I found him in jail because I found his book, Jailhouse Strong, under my bed. And before they canceled it from the California judicial system. But in that book, it talked about, Josh is really big on like mental movies and like positivity and stuff like that. And that's like positive, like after like positive self-talk affirmations. And that's kind of like what helped me develop, like, I don't want to say like an ego, but like helped me develop, like, you know, I'm capable. If I can see it, I can believe it. I can do anything I want. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's like a level of confidence. You gotta be there. It's like, there's a line between like cocky and confident that you gotta kind of ride, and you have to ride that as a lifter. You kind of have to ride it as a business owner too, especially like in this day and age. Like you've got to be confident to put yourself out there because you know there's going to be a certain amount of people that think you're fucking lame, or they think you're this, or they think you're that.
And I like that. And I tell people, when people think you're lame, that's awesome because the trash auto regulates itself. So if you're transparent to the world, you have nothing to hide. And if people don't like you for who you are, then fuck them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what happened to me one day, like when I first got the guy that hired me, we're not friends no more because he almost tried to hold me. And I said, oh, you'll never, he's like, you'll always be, he literally told me you'll always be an ant in the industry because like, you don't fit the part. You don't look the part. You're not a jock. You're not a meathead. La da 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 da. Well, whatever. I can do it. You know what I mean? I knew I could do it. And I just watched how he ran his business, or watched a bunch of people, how they ran their business and how they failed. And I paid attention for years. And what I mean by that is just like, I just watched how people did things wrong. So I just did the opposite. You know what I mean? And I didn't treat people as when I had a client, I didn't act like I owned them. It became like we developed a relationship. They became friends. And I have like an excellent client retention rate. Because they're my homies now. You know what I mean? It's not just someone that's putting money in my pocket. I look at each of my clients as a walking, talking business card. That's the investment. There's no reason for me to like, what I mean is that I don't need to have business cards because they go out there and like people are like, damn, dude, you're fucking stacked. How'd you do that? Oh, Mike D. You know what I mean? Damn, dude, you got big bench. How'd you do that? Mike D. Damn, girl, you pulled 565 pounds on a platform. You only weigh 165. How'd you do that? Mike D. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's sick. Like, I think, creating those relationships is huge. And like you said, like looking at what other people did and doing the opposite and doing what you want to do, there's something to be said for like, what's that saying? It's like, if you're always honest, you don't need a good memory. Where it's like, if you're just real all the time, like, and that's a great business model too, because it just is what it is. And like, people either fuck with you or they don't.
Right.
And
it's like what you're saying about being blasted on your knuckles and stuff like that. You know, my record, ain't no one going to hire me, you know, maybe now because it's been so long. But I was like, I had all kinds of stupid, like shitty, like jailhouse tattoos, like stuff in the, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I just start blasting myself. Like, a lot of my clients are tattoo artists. I just start blasting myself. Like, weren't you ready to scare people away? Nah, because now I got to work harder. If I put a fucking tattoo, it says heavy right across my fucking face. You know what I mean? And I have enough cons. I go walk in any room and I know I can get money out of anyone's pocket. I mean that in a nice way. I mean, like, hey, man, my name is Mike D. This is my 501c3. This is what we're doing for the community here in North County, San Diego. How would you like to help out? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I just, either they're going to say yes or no. It doesn't matter what you look like. It's how you present yourself. I may look scary. You know what I mean? But I just have what I call resting bench face. You know what I mean? I know I'm confident I can sell myself to anybody, because even in the work of my addiction, I can sell myself to anybody, you know?
That skill.
You know what I mean? But I wasn't. But nowadays I am fine. You know, I wake up these last 2 weeks have been like the happiest 2 weeks of my life, and I don't really know what changed. We've had a lot going on this summer. We had to go to Atlanta, to Georgia for like a USPA drug test nationals. I went to Vegas twice for Fight or Quit 2, and I had to go back for USPA non-tested nationals. It's just a lot of stress, right? And like as a coach, is like I have like over 40 freaking athletes, and then like to go to these competitions, sometimes more than 5 or 6 compete at a time. And even though I'm not lifting on that platform, it's so taxing to me because I'm so invested in these people. Because one, I care about their goals, right? Two, I wish I was up there. So when they're up there, I'm like back there. That's where the term heavy breathing comes from. You can hear me hyperventilate because I'm so dialed in on what they want to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm kind of just going off on a tangent now. I don't even remember what we're talking
about. No, dude, I love that, dude. Like, run it, because let's get into that. Like, you've referenced your nonprofit. You just referenced it again. Like, tell me what's good with it. Like, what are you doing? What is it about? How did you come, how did you come to the thought of doing a nonprofit? Like, what's the story with it?
So with the nonprofit is basically the same thing as MBSM. MBSM really stands for Most Dedicated Strength Methods, or whatever you want to call it. It's just fucking initials and acronym for whatever makes you feel good. But the idea with MBSM is that's the lifting, that's the coaching. I don't call myself a powerlifting coach because that diminishes my reach. I'm a coach and I can help anyone reach any goal they want. But the idea is to help build a total on the platform or whatever what they want, right? Now with heavy breathing, the idea with heavy breathing is to build a total value of the individual, as in help building like that positive mental fortitude and stuff like that. And the way I started developing that is because I started noticing trauma attracts trauma. I started working with people that had very similar stories, guys getting out of prison or jail, they're struggling with addiction and they're in recovery, and or like these women coming from like bad, like abusive relationships, and they're sharing all this stuff with me, which is funny because I actually was going to school for a while to be an AODS counselor, alcohol and drug studies, and it started making me regret my own recovery because all I fucking did was talk about drugs, right?
Yeah.
They went from doing drugs and then just talking about not doing drugs, it fucking drove me. And so the guy became the coach or whatever, and honestly, it became the same fucking thing, because when you coach people one-on-one, they tell you all your problems, and it's like, all right, cool, well, yeah, that sounds bad. Let me relate to you a little bit and then give them a little bit of stuff that you've been through, and they kind of look at it different, right? And so I guess what I was doing without knowing it was I was helping motivate people with my story. So I'm like, yeah, man, I've been through something similar. And again, I'm not making people oh, you're not allowed to feel bad because I've been through worse. I don't measure plates. Just because I've been through something crazy and you have been through the same shit doesn't mean what you went through wasn't just as traumatic. Right. So as I said, trauma started attracting trauma, and I started knowing these people, these women, like especially some of the women were telling me, it's like, dude, you've really helped me out a lot. And I started noticing like this one girl, Leah, who's on my board, she used to come and she came from a bad marriage. She just come in the room all the time, sad, slouched over. And over the last few years, like she's one of the strongest poolers in the room now, but she walks in head up, shoulders back, just chest out, confidence. You know what I mean? I was like, damn, dude, we can do this, and we can do this for like kids and stuff like that too. Because the reason why I got into trouble, part of the reason why I got into trouble was like, they wouldn't let me do, I didn't want to do sports, right? So they wouldn't let me in the weight room. I was like, well, if you offer a safe space where people who are like, maybe who are at risk, not just youth, but any at-risk individual can come in here, learn how to lift and build confidence. Because no matter what, strength builds confidence, and strength is subjective to the individual. I may not be out there benching 600 pounds, but I'm moving some weight and I'm hitting my own goals, and that's all that really matters at the end of the day, right?
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like that, man. That's awesome. So like, obviously building confidence outside of the weight room, but they kind of feed both things, right? So like right now, me and my wife, we bought a gym this year, and I'd say 70% of the members are like high school athletes.
Right.
So we see kids from basically from like 13 to 19 is like the core group. Mm-hmm. We have some college kids mixed in there too.
Right.
But I was actually talking to one of the parents the other day, and he was saying, he was like, well, we were testing bench, and he was like, wow, it must be really, awesome to see these kids hitting these numbers and, make you feel good. It's like, well, seeing them hit PRs on their bench, like that doesn't really do anything for me because I know my shit works. Like I'm confident in my coaching. Like, as far as program, like, what it's like. It's like, whatever, dude. Like, yeah, I know all these kids are going to hit their bench PRs. Mm-hmm. I know that because I've watched them every day and all this stuff. The thing that I fuck with, and it's funny you're talking about all this stuff because this was just last week, me and you were talking. It's like the thing that I really like is watching a kid find his confidence or her confidence. And we have a few kids in the gym that are like, you know, like middle adolescent, late adolescent, that might have been a little shy or quiet or just like not confident. You can see it, you know?
Right.
And then all of a sudden, a couple weeks in the gym, couple PRs, couple this, whatever, all of a sudden they're talking to people more. They're more confident. They're walking around like maybe they used to work out with a fucking hoodie on everything. Now they're walking around with a t-shirt. They're a little more confident. And that shit to me matters at that stage of the game. It almost matters more than the weight on the bar.
Yeah.
Because like most of these, you know, most people like they're in and out of the gym for the most of their life. Most people aren't, it's not their life. It's like something they do on the side. So it's sick to watch kids like, cause that confidence carries over to everything. It's like now when that kid walks into a fucking interview, like you said, or walks into a room where they have to sell themselves, it's like they can present in a more confident way. And it's like you said, like, you know, trauma brings, you know, attracts trauma, like confidence attracts confidence too.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And so like what you're doing with your clients where it's like you might have a woman who's coming off of a bad marriage or a shitty situation and you can show that person, this is how you're confident, this is how it works. It's like you kind of build a really strong base for someone and then they can pass that on too.
Right.
So as far as the Heavy Breathing Foundation, like what sort of things do you guys do? Do you do like clinics for kids or do you put up money for meets or like what is it that you guys do exactly?
So we just got the 501c3 finally back in January. It was
sick. Congratulations.
It took because of COVID, it was all slow, but we applied back in April. And my goal with the foundation is this. One is we're helping at-risk individuals. So it's not just kids, it's like women, people in recovery, whoever can apply. We have a whole thing. We have a sheet they can fill out. And we're not running clinics yet. Right now I personally am working with three kids. I have a 13-year-old, a 15-year-old, and a 17-year-old, right? And our whole thing is we pay for their gym memberships. We pay for their equipment. We pay for their competition. But most importantly, they understand that powerlifting comes last, school comes first. Right.
Sure.
And get all that stuff done too. So we have actual people, we have members in our group that are in Cal State San Marcos to help them, like check in with them for educational goals and stuff like that. But what we're also doing is I'm trying to teach them, like, hey, man, you know, the time you spend in this gym, this is resume building, you know? And it's like when you guys turn 18 and you go to school, there's no reason why you can't go get a cert and start doing this as a side hustle. And what I'm trying to do with these kids is create the new generation of lifters and coaches that are actually decent. Right? Because there's a lot of bad information out there. There's a lot of people out there who are really shitty coaches. And what I want to do is change that, at least out here in Southern California. And, but it was also cool. We have through MDSM and heavy breathing, there's so many resources. I mean, we have doctors, we have lawyers, we have whatever. There's so much, we have people that do job coaching and stuff like that. We can literally do whatever we want to help whoever we want. Right. So the mission is very broad, but no matter, as in like that way we can, that way we don't get like, they can't tell us, oh, you can't do that. We're just there to help the community. And so we're actually linked up with a bunch of several nonprofits up here. There's one that's called Humanity Showers, where they bring these buses out and they shower the homeless or whatever. So we sometimes do fundraising with them. We're like, add all this leftover inventory. And I was like, cool, man. Anyone who donates $5 or more, I'll donate a pair of MDSM socks, right? And we like got rid of like 80 pairs within an hour, right? And then there's another nonprofit called Project Rebound, and that's I believe by one of my board members who's in, again, a professor at Cal State. And what he does is walk people who get out of prison, he basically helps them, and they want to go to school, he basically holds their hand through the process, helps them get an education. And then we're linked up with one called, I'm forgetting it, but it's like they're kind of similar to what we do, where they supplement with boxing to help build confidence. So it'll send us like the less conditioned kids, I should say, and then and that may be more interested in lifting weights. And these kids are on they've been on juvenile probation, and they're already doing the work. So that's the main thing too. Like, I can't save no one's life. Most of the people that we're helping are already doing the work. What we are is just a supplemental tool to keep them on the right path.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Right. So it's like you're really teaching and helping kids, like in many different areas. And I think that's so fucking cool. And I really like the idea of keeping it vague and kind of not vague, but broad, where it's like, yeah, bro, like we can definitely help you in the gym, but we can also want to make sure that you're doing well in school and helping you with like the real life stuff. Because even like Because even kids that are not at like a in a super high risk situation, mm-hmm. a lot of the younger kids, I'm going to sound like some fucking boomer when I say this, but a lot of these younger kids, like they don't really know how to interact with like an authority figure or interact with like where it's like, yo, man, put some fucking bass in your voice, look them in the eye, shake their fucking hand, like have some confidence in yourself. And being able to teach those things to kids is huge. And like, you know, put your fucking phone down. We're working out right now is like a skill, like something we've started doing in the gym where it's like, I'm not going to take people's phones from them. I'm not going to be that guy where I mm-hmm. take someone's phone when they're training. Like, I don't want to be that person. But what we do is like, we just rib them a little bit when they're on their phone. Like, hey, dude, are you a nerd that's on your phone? Or are you going to come and work out? Like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? It's like, hey, like this dude over here outbenches you by 30 pounds. Like, well, where's his phone? Oh, it's over by his shoes. Like, cause he's working out and you're holding your phone, and it creates a kind of culture mm-hmm. where you're teaching these kids like, yo, when you're working. And when you're fucking around and you're playing around on your phone, you're fucking around playing on your phone. And those two things don't cross over.
Right.
And I think that stuff like that's really important and kind of showing people how to have like integrity and confidence and all that is fucking huge.
Yeah.
Do you, I kind of want to like go back to something you said, like when you were talking about, you know, you could go into a room and you could present, you know, yourself to people and, you know, you can work with, you know, high level business people and stuff, even with like, you know, covered in tattoos and you have a record, all this stuff. Like, I feel like sometimes, and maybe it's just me, but like, you know, I got my throat tattooed, my whole head tattooed, like whatever, my ears are stretched out huge. I kind of like that feeling where like you walk in and they might think maybe they think you're kind of stupid.
Yes.
Or they think you're like, I kind of fuck with that because it's like they underestimate you. So you walk in and it's like, yeah, man, like A, they look at you because you're kind of, you know, you're jacked, you're muscular. And so they might think the stereotype's like big, dumb meathead. Like, okay, so you've got that. And then the tattoos add another thing and, you know, all that stuff. It's like, I kind of like that. Like, how have you had that feeling where you're like, oh yeah, this dude thinks I'm a fucking idiot. Hold on. I'm gonna hit him with this and this. And then all of a sudden it flips him upside down. And like, I feel like you can gain a lot of respect that way too, because they're like, holy shit, how'd this dude, because in their brain, it doesn't make sense with how you look and how you speak.
Right. It's like, it's almost like the tattoos almost brand myself. I don't want to talk stupid like that. But I mean, it's like,
it makes sense. Dude.
In, it's like, you're always going to know who the fuck I am in North County, San Diego. If I'm walking down, down the strand in Oceanside, like on the beach or whatever, there's that fucker who has that. Like, I have my son's named after the Slayer album, Rain and Blood. And my whole sternum from like right below my nipples all the way down to like below my gut, it says rain from across, right? You can read that shit from outer space. You know what I'm saying? You know who I am walking down the street. And when I walk in the room, you see me in my head, I look like Medusa. I got 11 snakes tattooed across my head. You know what I'm saying? I got heavy across my forehead. You're always going to remember who I am, you know? And to me, that's empowering because in the past, I felt like I wasn't noticed. That's part of the problem, you know? And now I walk in the room, I've created this image. The image is more just a tattoo. It's like, I am who I always wanted to be now, right? I'm the confident fool. I've always, you know, as a kid, I used to make my dad was an artist, like, draw me a buff guy with tattoos. I'm not saying the buffest dude on the block. I got some chub. But I mean, like, I'm like who I always wanted to be. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so when I
walk that's a good feeling too.
Yeah. When I walk in a room, and it's more like people walk up, it's like, so here's the question I love. Did that hurt? Which one? And the one on your head. And it's like, no, not to sound like a tough guy, but the head doesn't hurt. But this one didn't feel good at all. And I'll show them something like in an easy spot. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
You know? So what's your name? And like a lot. And I was like, well, my name's Mike D. Like, I was sitting in a barber chair like a month ago. And what happened was my homie has a barber shop called Black Sheep Barber. And it's his second shop, and like the city was there to like for the grand opening. And I was like, fuck, man, what, can you schedule me a different time? I didn't need to be here for the party. Anyways, like he's doing my hair, and this dude walks up, he starts talking to me about my tattoo on my head because it says heavy. And he's like, what's that about? I'm like, well, it's my nonprofit 501c3. He's like, oh, you have a 501c3? And I spit it at him. I'm like, yeah, I do this. And I didn't really have much time to talk, so I'm about to go leave and finish getting my head blasted. Here's my card, and it's one of those ones where you tap on the phone and gives all your information. And the dude looked me up and he gave me his business card. And what he is, he's the president of the city council in Escondido. Now he wants me going to schools like during Red Ribbon Week and talk about drug addiction and stuff like that. So that's another thing we're trying to do. The foundation is I'm trying to become like, I'm not saying I'm trying to become the new face of recovery, but I'm trying to change the way recovery looks like. When I was a kid, you got these dudes come into rooms. Like, again, I'll say these square ass dudes coming here telling me not to do certain things. I'm like, man, did you even do it though? So how can you relate? You know what I'm saying?
I know that feeling. Like, you know? It's important. Like, you want the kids to, and the people going through that to be able to relate to you. And I've talked to my wife about this a lot because, you know, with the kids in the gym and all that, it's like, they need someone who's an adult mm-hmm. that can be real with them, but also right. be sort of like an authority figure. I don't really like calling myself that, but it is what it is, dude. You know what I mean? Right. Like if you're coaching a handful of 15-year-olds in your fucking gym, you are the authority figure, whether you like it or not.
Right.
but there's something to be said for like, showing these dudes, you know, and we're kind of in like a, we're kind of in like an affluent area, you know, we're in the capital of New Hampshire and all this stuff. And like, so it's kind of a nice area. And it's been really cool. Like you said, like the branding, it does sound cheesy. Like the tattoos are the branding, but it is because people see it and they know who you are. Right. And as soon as they see you, they know who you are. And I think it's important, like you said, changing the face of recovery, changing the face of like what that looks like. Like no one wants to have some skinny dude that's never lifted a weight tell them how to lift weights.
Right.
By the same token, like someone who's been through it or is on the cusp of being gone through it as far as like drugs, alcohol, whatever, they don't want to talk to some dork in, you know, no disrespect, but like some dork in a police outfit, like telling them not to do shit. It's unrelatable.
Yeah.
I think what you're doing is really cool, man. Cause it's like, if you show up to a school, a high school to talk about drugs, everyone's going to hear that they're going to have this big thing in the, you know, cafeteria and this guy's going to talk to you about drugs and everybody's already rolling their fucking eyes.
Yeah.
But then when you step up there, it gives a different vibe. You got everybody's fucking attention.
Exactly.
Cause a lot of those kids probably never seen somebody with a face tattoo before.
Exactly. And that's the biggest thing for me is, man. And the reason why I do that is like I'm going to be going back. I already talked to my old high school in the district down there. And it's all, when the kid's going to get me in his high school, in his district out here, like this is already all planned out. And it's going to be really cool. Like it's my testimony. It's my story, but it's honest. And it's my living amends, being able to give back like that. And that's what heavy breathing is to me. It's my living amends. There's a lot of harm that I did. I'm not talking about just physical. I'm talking about there's a lot of harm I did to my community, a lot of harm I did to my family, a lot of harm I did to my friends. And the Heavy Breathing Foundation will be my legend. I'm not in it for the fame, but that will be my legend to give back to community in San Diego. And it's like everything that's what's big deal to me. It's like, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Do you feel like sort of responsible to, like, that's part of your responsibility to give back like that?
Yeah. Because there's a lot of wrong, you know, I don't know. I'm not big on AA and NA. It was there for me when I needed it. And I, you know, I've worked my steps and I'm just saying like, you know, when you had to come clean for all the dirt you did and there's, you know, you know, you're supposed to go out and apologize for everything you did wrong too.
Sure. Yep.
But also there's a lot of stuff you can't apologize for if it's going to cause more harm to you or the individual. Correct. And
right,
so
yeah.
What I do is one, I dropped all the garbage I was doing. I'm leading an honest life. And I'm doing this to make up for the stuff I can't say sorry for. And that's what's super important to me. And also because I have this little boy and he looks up to me like this. You know what I mean? And my dad was real gnarly. My dad had a lot of problems too, but I loved my dad. But he didn't necessarily lead a good example for me. And that's what I'm going to give my son. I want him to see that, like, you know, no matter what you've, like, even if you've fallen shit, you can stand up and smell like a rose if you want to, boy. That's what I want to teach my son, you know?
Yeah. I love that, dude. That's like, it's never too late to turn stuff around. Like all those cliche things are cliche for a reason. Cause there's truth and value to them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like all that, like, doesn't matter how many times you get knocked down. It's how many times you stand up and all that stuff. That, like, that shit's real though, bro. Like,
sure. I tell people when they fuck up all the time, it's like, dude. And it's like, Mike, I did this. I'm like, okay, I ain't going to judge you. It's like, I don't judge anyone how they fall down, homie. It's how you stand back up. That's just integrity. That's what makes a man. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's all this bullshit on the internet right now. I'm not going to drop names. All these dudes trying to tell you, he's like, you got to wake up early in the morning every fucking day and be a creature of habit. Otherwise, you're not a true fucking man. You know what I mean? He's like, fuck you. You know, I'm a man because I know I do what I got to do to provide the best for my people. You know what I'm saying? I don't need someone to tell me because they're a creature of habit, unwilling to fucking change, that's what being a man is. You know what I'm saying? And
they said, I think part of it is admitting the faults, right? Like that takes a lot to do. We had a fucking, we had a situation in the gym where someone was fucking with my truck and I couldn't tell who, I thought it was a kid in the gym. And I like kind of called this kid out. I was like, the fuck, he's only like 17 and I'm giving him shit. I'm like, dude, you don't do that to somebody, you know, who's done right by you type of thing. Mm-hmm. Come to find out, it was one of my buddies fucking with my truck.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, you know, I just like kind of gave it to this kid in front of his friends. So I was like, yo, I turned the music down at the gym. I was like, hey, I just want to apologize to Andrew in front of all of these people because I fucked up and was kind of a dick to him.
Right.
And he didn't do anything wrong. And it's like, afterwards, I'm thinking, I'm like, that was kind of a life lesson for the kids in there too, where it's like, own your shit. Like, and if you're willing to apologize, like you can't publicly shit on someone and then privately apologize.
Right.
You got a public, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, you can't be a shithead in public, then apologize privately in a text message. You got to do that shit in front of everybody or it doesn't hold the same weight. I think that's what you're really doing, man. I think what you're doing is really cool. And I like your vibe and I like how honest and raw you are, because I think in our industry, there's like a section of our industry where it's like, it's very real. I feel like, you know, like, and very raw, like, you know, what Tim does with Ritual, what you're doing, what I'm doing. I feel like it's very like raw, but there is like, as a whole, the fitness industry, I hate even calling it that, is kind of bullshit. There's a lot of fucking fake bullshit, even inside of powerlifting, where it's supposed to be these, it's like, there's a lot of like, just like pompous crap. That's and
I tell people, like, we're the last, like me, you, people that I'm not trying to like tell us, people like you and I tell my homies, like, we're the last of the dinosaurs, right? And that's, like, it's responsible. And I actually did seminars last year. I did free seminars all summer long. And it was like, why? Because, well, the investment is the people driving up to see me. But because all this information is on the internet already. That's how I learned. I mean, I got my certs. I'm going to school, whatever. I'm going to school to get a CSCS just to say I fucking did it. Not to be like, oh, cool, now I can coach. No, motherfucker, I already built my resume in the trenches. But, what were you saying? I got off track. What were you saying?
No, I was just saying that there's a lot of bullshit in the industry. And I think you're doing is great.
Yeah, so I created like the last of the dinosaurs, because I'd be like, we're responsible to make sure that these old training methodologies don't get lost. Because of new age bullshit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the pocket protector. We were talking about that. We were training the other day. I'm like, man, like, I think it's really important to have, like, you know, smart science stuff and all that shit. But like, if you haven't lifted a heavy weight, if you haven't trained, if you haven't been in it, like, I'm not super interested in what you have to say. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just, it's like, I would never want to get tattooed by someone who didn't have any tattoos.
Right.
That'd be fucking weird.
Right.
And that's just I don't think people are wrong for doing it, but for me, I'm like, bro, you got to show, like, pretend like you've been here before.
I treated my training like my recovery when I got into it. So when I said, AA was there for me when I really needed it in the beginning, you know, because I came in sober right after my dad died, girl's pregnant, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, really, I could lose it anytime if I wanted to, you know what I mean? And so when I decided to get a sponsor, when I got sponsored, I was like, well, I'll choose the cool guy who maybe has girls talk to him, you know what I mean? And instead, I said, all right, cool. Who's got the most fucking clean time in here? This dude's like, I got 40 years. All right, you're my sponsor. Because obviously, what the fuck you're doing then. You have an idea to stay 40 years clean and sober. And so when I got into the weight room, I didn't go look at like, who's the, oh, this dude pulled like this much this week. He had this cue and he's the one. No, I picked the guy who actually had time in the trenches. Like, yeah, I've been doing this for fucking 15 years, a decade more. You know what I mean? I've had
injuries.
I learned from this. And like, and it's like, cool, I'm going to listen to that shit. You know,
I really like that, man. That's great advice too for anybody. Yeah. So, yo, we're coming towards the end here. I like to end with a question. I change it every week. I used to do the same one, but we change it based on who I'm talking to and what's their story. So, I guess if you could give one piece of advice, like you've been through it, dude. You know, you've been through the bullshit. You've pulled yourself up. I hate the expression, but you pulled yourself up by your bootstraps. Mm-hmm. You've made a life for yourself and your son and all that stuff. For someone right now who might be struggling either with drugs, depression, anxiety, like any of that stuff, like what's a small piece of advice you would give them to move forward and something maybe you would say that you wish you had heard when you were going through it?
It's – well, if they're like stuck in the addiction – it might be hard for them to hear this or want to be able to do it, but you have to just ask, as stubborn as you are, as we are, as these kind of people, understand you're not weak. Weakness is refusing to ask for help. Strength is asking for help. So if you want help, don't think you have to do it alone. I didn't do this alone. Like MDSM, the HBF, all that became through the network of people, my team members who motivated me to do this. And I don't know what I'm doing. Everyone's like, oh, like you did all this. Like, yeah, but I got this strong ass team behind me. Use your people. If you're lucky enough to still have people in your life, just say help. That's it. There's strength in that one word, help. That's it.
Fuck it. Fuck yeah, dude. That's great advice. Mm-hmm. Yo, give out, how can people find you? How can people follow you? Give out all your social media, like all that shit, pump that shit so people can go check you out.
You can find me on Instagram at MikeMDSM. That's where you'll find links to the Heavy Breathing Foundation. Heavy Breathing Foundation is also on Instagram. It's Heavy_Breathing_Foundation. We also have a thrift shop that you can find through the links out there. It's part of some of the ways we raise money. On those, you'll find Give Butter links if you want to donate. But honestly, just follow me. We have clothing drops like every couple months. We have our first competition coming up in a couple weeks. And yeah, if you want to get involved or you feel like you're fit or you know someone who could fit, we're not just helping people in San Diego. We believe we're a cloud and we can help people anywhere. So, and we don't limit it. And we don't limit it to the Federation. It's who needs help, right?
Hell yeah.
We believe in
food. Make sure you guys go out and follow him. Like, this is really cool stuff. His Instagram is lit, and he does a really good job with everything. I was, you know, before we got on here, I checked it all out, and like, I think what you're doing is fucking awesome, man. Like, and I really respect. Like I said, I've said a bunch of kiss your ass one more time here, but being real and being raw and not being scared to put out your mistakes and all that is really cool. So thank you for coming on today. I really appreciate it. Guys, that's all we got for today. Make sure that you follow my personal page, AnthonyCW13. Make sure you follow the trigger warning page, trigger_warning_conjugate. And then lastly, make sure you follow the gym page, Anchor Athletics NH. We're about to announce the next meet we're doing in December. We're doing some cool like charity work with it too. So make sure you follow there to see all the updates on that. That's all we got for today, guys. Thanks again for listening to the TWC Stay Hated podcast. And as always, stay hated, motherfuckers.